evening, everyone. We're here starting with tonight's Bethlehem City Council meeting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Squishack.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Casenta.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. I'll recognize Mr. Callahan is joining us remotely due to being under the weather this evening. And Mayor Reynolds, also under the weather, was out of work a little bit today, so will not be joining council this evening. Prior to consideration of the regular agenda items, City Council will conduct a public hearing to receive comment concerning a request from Attorney Dennis Benner, representing DB6 Incorporated. And DB3 LLC, requesting an amendment to the city zoning map by changing the zoning district containing two parcels at 8th Avenue and Martin Court from mixed-use commercial district, CMU, to the shopping center district, CS. This privately proposed rezoning request is related to a proposal to build an upscale car wash and or a restaurant. The public hearing is for informational purposes only. No votes will be cast during the public hearing. In connection with this public hearing, there are two communications. Mr. Miller, please read communication 6A.
March 17th, 2025 memorandum from Assistant Planning and Zoning Director Craig Pfeiffer outlining the City Planning Commission's review of zoning map amendment proposed for 8th Avenue and Martin Court. Mr. Pfeiffer reported that the Planning Commission voted 4-0 to recommend approval of this amendment.
And please read communication 6B.
March 18th, 2025 correspondence from Jill Seitz, Chief Community and Regional Planner with the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Ms. Seitz assessed that rezoning this property from the existing mixed-use commercial district to the adjacent shopping center zoning district is a logical extension and aligns with the LVPC's future LV, the regional plan. However, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission strongly recommends requiring a subdivision of the primary property and lot line adjustment with the adjacent parcel to avoid split zoning. Determining property lines should occur prior to the approval of the zoning district change.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. The public hearing is called to order. I'll start by recognizing representatives of the zoning amendment petitioner to speak about the requested zoning map amendment. And sir, and anyone else who is going to be presenting, if you don't mind just identifying yourself for the purposes of council and the audience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dennis Benner. I am the applicant before the council this evening. I'm asking the city council to consider a zoning map amendment. The existing zoning is CMU. It's got, for lack of a better word, some commercial light kinds of uses available to it. The property across the street is CS. More of an intense commercial use. I've identified some likely uses for the property. One is a pretty upscale car wash. Very responsible people in terms of their environmental application to car washes. I think that would be a good fit at this particular location. I've also had some conversations with some restaurants. It should be no surprise that every restaurant that you talk to requests some sort of a drive-through. And the CMU does not permit a drive-through. CS does. That's pretty much the extent of what this is about. Any kind of a use certainly needs to go before the City Planning Commission and all the appropriate bodies to advance any kind of a real use for the property. I've asked Darren Heckman from Keystone Engineer to join me this evening. In the event there are any questions from the City Council, he's got a board in front of us here. Hopefully you can see what this is. You may have it in your packet. But there's no land plan that's being suggested this evening, just to clear the way to be able to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Benner. Did you have anything else you would add before we...
I don't think so, though.
Open it up for discussion? Thank you. Was there anyone from the administration who wants to make comment this evening?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep my comments relatively brief. I believe Mr. Benner summed it up quite nicely. You'll see in our memo that we do outline what was there. This district was created back in 2006, the CMU district. It was created for the purpose of allowing for lighter commercial uses. Directly beneath this district is the CS, which is more, let's call it vehicular intense type of uses. In our memo, we do recommend approval. The Planning Commission also did recommend approval. We feel that this is a logical extension of the CS district of 8th Avenue. And I'll take any questions that you might have.
Thank you. So at this time, I will open it up to members of council for comment, either the applicant, Mr. Benner, and anyone who's with them, or the administration. I'll start with anyone from council who has questions. I'll start with Councilman Francis Smith and work my way down.
I guess this, I don't know if this is for Craig, or I just want to clarify. So the CS is right across the street from the current site, and CS would allow the car wash and or the restaurant then?
It would allow specifically the car wash and specifically a restaurant with a drive.
Okay, which is what they're petitioning for.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Quijada.
Thank you. I did have one question about in the LVPC letter, they strongly recommend requiring a subdivision of the primary property and a lot line adjustment with the adjacent parcel to avoid split zoning, and said that this should occur before approving a zoning district change. Have you done that?
I have not. What I can do is give the city or the Planning Commission, whoever may require it, the net result of that request. That request does not contemplate the existing underlying ownership, it being a condominium form of ownership. If I did that, I would destroy the condominium regime that's existing on that property. So that's why I had our engineer do a plot plan and a meets and bounds description to present with this application. So there would be total clarity in terms of what we're doing here.
So just to be clear, all of these add up to the full parcel, that all these names of these owners and their addresses, they all own a piece of this in a condominium?
Yes, I own all of those condominium units. And a number of years ago, when we developed the property, they were done in a condominium form of ownership for various reasons. And then a number of years ago, I did some financing, and that's why there was the subject property was a flexible condominium. In other words, you could add it to it at a later date, and that's what I did. 2017 kind of time frame,
but that ownership arrangement, was it done in contemplation of building actually condominiums, residences, or was it just a use of the ownership structure for other purposes?
There's often a mistake or a misunderstanding what a condominium is. It's really just a form of legal ownership. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think it's like an apartment building or some residential unit. It's not. It could be a parking lot spot. It could be a boat slip. It could be anything in a condominium form of ownership. And it's owned together with common areas. And the common areas in a condominium form of ownership is what has been the driving force for this property for the last 15 or 20 years.
How so? Why? Can you explain what the benefit of it is?
When you do... It has a lot to do with the design of a project in terms of it's one lot, and there's condominium forms of ownership. And if you were to have multiple lots, like with a subdivision, you would have side yard setbacks for every use that you have there. It becomes very cumbersome in terms of when you start doing a commercial development, and that's why a lot of this is done in the condominium form.
So, I know you said across the street. When you said across the street, it's CS. You meant across the street where Price Right is?
That's correct.
And Lowe's. Okay,
yes.
So on the other side of the...
Yes.
Okay. Was there a reason why that part wasn't designated CS at the time that the redevelopment started happening over there?
I can't speak to that. I don't know. It goes back 20-some years, 25, 30 years.
Okay.
Predated me.
All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Clear questions from council?
Just quickly, I want to confirm something I don't think I understood until this evening, that the only type of restaurant that is permitted on this property is a restaurant with a drive-thru?
As it currently is, CMU, you wouldn't be allowed to have a restaurant there, but without a drive-thru. If
okay.
You change it to CS, then a restaurant with a drive-thru would be permitted.
Or a restaurant without a drive-thru?
Correct.
Okay, just wanted to make sure where... But it sounds like you're... In particular, seeking a restaurant with a drive-thru, that is to say, we're looking at fast casual, fast food style,
yeah.
Or are you considering?
I'm considering that as well as one without, but I like the flexibility because to have a restaurant go to a particular location these days, it's very hard to even have a conversation without a drive-thru restaurant. I think Coleman drove that whole narrative. And I see it even with other properties that I have, is they won't even talk without a drive-thru.
Okay, and also something I thought I understood in reading prior to this meeting is that there was the possibility of a combined, is this a misunderstanding? There's not, it's not gonna be a drive-through car wash slash restaurant.
No.
Okay,
just
wanna make sure. I could have sworn I saw that somewhere. I was wondering also if you could say a little bit more about you sort of indicated that the car wash is sort of known for its environmentally friendly practices. Could you say a little bit more about that?
The likely operator is a company called Cloud 10. They're out of New England. It's financially backed by private equity. There's significant assets behind this company, and they've taken a posture when they're doing this to be very environmentally friendly in terms of reuse of water, in terms of the chemicals that go into the mix itself. For example, it's about 17 to 22 gallons per wash. It's about the same amount of water a person takes a shower with. They're very community friendly. They do things for the community to help them out. I think they'd be a very good neighbor.
Okay, you said Cloud 10?
Cloud 10, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions from Council? Councilwoman
Neal? I had a question about surrounding. So we talked a little bit about the increased density and the increased traffic that you would expect under CS. So with that next to the Martin Tower site, and that's potential development, do you think that area can handle the amount of density, that additional shopping as well as additional housing when it does come? Is that area capable of handling that density?
So I'm not a traffic engineer, but I would say that the way the intersection is designed, it takes into consideration both traffic and pedestrian safety.
Okay, and whenever things do get developed, there would be additional traffic studies done along in that process as well anyway?
Certainly with the Martin Court site.
Yeah, thank
Martin
you.
Tower site, yes.
Yeah, thanks.
Any other questions from members of council? So a couple questions I had for everybody. First, can you just speak to the question about do we know why this is zoned? One, we talk about just the difference between CS and CMU on neighboring properties. Do you have any insight to how the map ended up looking the way it does?
A little bit of insight.
You can provide is appreciated.
Prior to my tenure, the interesting thing is across Martin Court, that little sliver of land before you get to where the stormwater detention pond is was actually rezoned to CS. So that little piece is actually CS. And what Mr. Benner's looking to do is push that CS a little bit further to the north to capture that stormwater detention pond. Going back and looking at the comprehensive plan, that area was also recommended for neighborhood commercial. So very similar to the conversation we had last month with another rezoning request, is CMU, just like the CL district, are more intended to be neighborhood-focused, walkable type of commercial uses. In this case, the CMU was created specifically for a lighter commercial use that was adjacent to residential districts. So we try to encourage those residents to have access to lighter commercial uses that don't require a vehicle to get to them.
Understood. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And then, Mr. Benner, a couple questions. Just for, I know there's a map that we're looking at, but can you just speak to what, if anything, is currently on this site? And then just for everyone kind of imagining and knowing where it is, what is adjacent to the site that we're talking about?
What is on the site is a marquee for Woodmont Apartments, and that's pretty much it. It's years ago, 15, 17 years ago, I contemplated some development at this location, and that's the reason why it was done in a condominium form of ownership, in a flexible form of condominium, because at that time I didn't know what, if anything, was going to happen there. A number of years ago, it took a while to acquire a little strip from Woodmont Views so we could have access coming off Martin Court. It was much safer, and it seemed like it's much more appropriate in terms of a location for a use at that location. But other than that, no, there's what appears to be a pond actually is a temporary structure contemplated 15, 17 years ago for some future development.
And we're talking about just south of CVS on 8th Avenue, correct?
No, just south of St. Luke's building, the neurology building.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for clarifying. The
covered up by some of the other notices, but it says this vehicle is considered abandoned due to the something listed violations and will be impounded if not repaired or removed. The whole thing, it's an orange vehicle tag. It's meant for vehicles. It's not for tents, and it's on a tent. And that same tent had a handwritten note on it from the Bethlehem Police Department saying, you need to remove all this trash, leave the area, no tents permitted, remove or it will be thrown away. Okay? So I think some of these responses we got from council members, we got at least three responses, if not more, and I'm really thankful to everyone who looked into it. The first response we got was from Ms. Laird, and so the explanation given was, notices were posted on these specific tents as a courtesy in case they're not abandoned. They're assuming they're abandoned, and include phone numbers for both the police department and community connections so people can notify them if they're not abandoned. No one has been asked to leave. So there are two things that are not fully accurate about that. One is that there's only one phone number. It says it's for the Health Bureau. I'm assuming it would get you to community connections. But there's only one phone number on those. That's a little beside the point. The other is that no one has been asked to leave because there is a handwritten note on this one tent saying you have to leave. I understand if these are abandoned property, then they're abandoned property. There's a real issue with that one tent that I pointed out. And additionally, even for these other tents, even if they're totally abandoned and they just used some boilerplate language, seeing that kind of thing scares people. People are in really precarious situations. You see several tents tagged with that kind of notice, you assume there's going to be a sweep. I think any reasonable person would actually think that after seeing that. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker signed up this evening, Regina Padilla.
Hello again. Regina Padilla, born and raised Southside Bethlehem, now live downtown. Anyway, I understand that Ordinance 94102 was put in place with the intention of maintaining order within the city, but homelessness is really complex and it comes with challenges that are difficult to solve. We need to consider the true impact of displacing people who are already at their lowest point and the harm that further disruption will cause. For many in the encampment, this location represents the closest thing to stability that they have. Moving them to this spot will disrupt whatever fragile routines and support systems that they've been able to build. These are people who've already lost a lot, their homes, their jobs, and in some cases, their families. We have an opportunity to show these people that we see them, that we recognize their humanity and the trauma that they've endured. Displacement is not the solution. Moving the encampment won't solve the problem, it'll just move it somewhere else without addressing the core issues at hand. The ordinance does not tackle the root cause of homelessness, so I understand that it's to like move tents and whatnot, but that's, I'm sorry. We have a lack of affordable housing, and we have mental health challenges and financial instability. We need long-term solution to homelessness that goes beyond simply pushing people out of sight. The current encampment is not an eyesore, it's a reflection of a much larger crisis in our city. We cannot just sweep the problem away. The focus should be on creating sustainable solutions, not just enforcing ordinances that fail to address the underlying causes of homelessness. I ask that y'all consider the moral responsibility that we have to our fellow residents. Displacing the homeless community without offering real solutions is an act of abandonment. I strongly encourage you all to take this opportunity to lead with compassion and empathy. There is no perfect solution and there is no quick fix, but the first step towards meaningful change is to treat those affected by homelessness as human beings deserving of kindness and respect. And here is your reminder that being homeless is not inherently a crime. It is simply a symptom of a society that has failed. And I'm not even shaking like a dog this time. I started Lexapro. Oh, I feel so good. I feel so good. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker signed up, Mark Will Weber.
Those are hard acts to follow. Mark Will Weber, 66 West Elizabeth Avenue. Here represent the DRIP, the consumer. Citizens page for about water and such. On our page, we occasionally post stuff from around the country as we find things that might be interested to our 365 viewers. This week, I posted something from South Lake, Texas, and it's a 3 or 4 minute video. Not the most exciting 4 minutes you're ever going to spend, but I would recommend that council look at it if you can. I also put it on Complainers of Bethlehem. And what it shows is a little video about an app called Eye on Water. Eye on Water is a little app that when you get a smart meter, if the bureaucratic department around you deems it worthwhile, also gives you this app, Eye on Water. You can monitor your water use daily, even hourly, actually. And they did a great job at presenting it and showing their constituents how to download it, how to put in a warning device. In other words, you could put in 100 gallons. So this app would beep your phone and say, hey, you've used 100 gallons in the last 2 days. And if you're typically using 30 gallons in 2 days, you go, okay, something's wrong, and I can check into it. In the case of what my wife and I went through and what the Solitario woman went through, we could have caught that like days into it instead of 3 months later getting a huge water bill, okay? And supposedly it's win-win because the city would conserve water, right? They don't want people wasting water even if it's by accident. Okay, so as we're getting smart meters here, we're told, well, we're going to look at this down the line. In other words, I've had a smart meter now, I think, for a year and a half, but no mention of when I will get an app like this, this Eye on Water app, which if South Lake, Texas can do it, you would think Bethlehem could do it, right? I mean, we have smart guys at the head of our sewer and water making six-figure salaries, so they should be able to figure that out. And yet, we keep hearing, well, we can't do it till everybody gets them. And it makes me think of, what if you went in for a car, and you bought the car and you're ready to drive out? Well, not only that you bought it, but they made you buy it. And then you, on the way out, go, wait a minute, this doesn't have a seatbelt. And you go back and you go, hey, can I have one with a seatbelt? And they go, well, we're going to wait till we sell all the cars on the lot, and then we'll give you a seatbelt. So the only thing that really protects the consumer with these smart meters, the only thing that's good for us, is the thing that's been put on the back burner. They haven't done anything. Meanwhile, they're collecting more revenue from the smart meters, less manpower hours, because these guys don't have to zip around the city anymore, because the smart meter is sending the data directly to the tower for them. Presumably less wear and tear on their vast vehicle fleet that they have. So, you know, what's in it for us? When do we get something for the consumer? I hope sooner rather than later. You know, they're going to drag it out for 3 or 4 years till people get this protection. I guarantee that there's people out there right now accumulating a large water bill that they don't know about that they're going to get next quarter. Okay? So why can't we do that? I mean, the city should be as good as South Lake, Texas, right? Christmas City, the Music Fest City, UNESCO Site City. What about the nuts and bolts for something like this? Let's address what the consumer citizen needs in this case of the water thing, okay? And there's no info on it. There's no timeline. Nobody says, hey, we're going to have this in X amount of time. You know, next year you'll have it. So please look at that video. That would be something that would be really good for everybody. And I don't know why we can't have it sooner than later. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weber. Our last speaker previously signed up, Megan Lesowski.
Hello, my name is Megan Lesowski. I live at 813 Hayes Street. I'm here tonight to talk about zoning reform to allow for small-scale development. The Lehigh Valley Planning Commission's plan for a housing crisis to add more luxury units. The Valley has seen an influx of upper-income residents, so let's vote for them. One such project is being voted on with our ordinance tonight about the Garrison in New Street. The thought is that as luxury housing is being built, upper-income residents will move into those homes, freeing up the homes at the bottom. It's like a ladder. Everyone moves up. And I think that's great. I think that we should keep doing that. But the thing is, those projects take a lot of time. And we do have great projects along the way. I'm really excited about the First Presbyterian Mixed Income Development and also in Southside Bethlehem. But the First Presbyterian, I think 2027 is when they might break ground. We need more units on our ground now. In other words, we could add more rungs to the ladder. I know Lehigh is working with the city on an alley home project, an additional dwelling unit. I think we're about a year out before we could see an ordinance go before council. So I'm here tonight to talk about some smaller changes that we could make sometime in the future. I have before me a Strong Towns Housing Ready checklist. On it, we have allow single family home conversion to a duplex or triplex by right. We have a special exception in an RT zone. Number two is permit backyard cottages in all residential zones. That's something that could come up in the next year. Number three is legalize starter homes in all residential zones. Eliminate minimum lot sizes requirements in existing neighborhoods. Repeal parking mandates for housing and streamline the approval process. I've been a member of Strong Towns for a year and I've started a small Bethlehem Strong Towns committee. We're not that active. I just got married. The other two have young children, just had babies, very exciting. What brought this to my mind is it's something that I've been thinking about for a while is last Wednesday before the zoning hearing board, there was a Southside resident who had a home who wanted to use the RT special acceptance to convert his N-unit row home into two apartments. His home is a double-wide row home. Up and down his street, on Atlantic Street, I ride my bike by there every day to get home, 13 foot, 13 foot. His home, 26 foot. What he wanted to do was cut it in half this way. Upstairs, he already has a full bathroom, kitchen, and bedrooms. Downstairs, full bathroom, kitchen, and bedrooms. There's already a separate entrance in the back, separate entrance in the front. He needed four variances to get permission to do that. He has one garage on site and three that, and there's a Bethlehem Parking Authority lot across the street that he would use. The board denied his case. The way that the board works is they go out in the hall, they make their decision, and they come back in, and then that property owner will receive a letter stating why he was denied. So what I'm here asking for tonight is we could allow single-family home conversion to a duplex or triplex by right. We could get rid of our simple special exception and permit it so that the people who are in our community, our small-scale developers and property owners, are able to create more units at a smaller scale as we continue and as we can do right now. Thank you.
Thank you. So that exhausts our list of who had signed up prior to the meeting, so I'll go around the room. Anyone who wants to make comment? Dennis, is for anything that we're not voting on tonight? So I'll start to the left. Was there anyone who I'll start in the front?
Hello there. My name is Ceres Capri. That's C-E-R-E-S. I'm a 27-year-old woman, and I live in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. There's a lot of women and a lot of men like me who live in this area. Contrary to what the federal government would have you believe. But that's not what I'm here to talk about tonight. I'm here to talk about the resources that we could be redirecting to the most needy people in our community, the homeless community in Bethlehem. As was previously stated by Valerie, we got a lot of notice that there was going to be a sweep, and there was a lot of miscommunication. It seems like everybody in the city council has knowledge of what is intended to happen at the encampments, but it's absurd to me that the people actually at the encampments, whenever I go down and talk to them, they seem very confused as to what the city's intentions are. Personally, I think that it's absurd. We came here last November to ask for the bathrooms to be opened, and they were open for about a month, and then they were closed for the rest of the winter. And to my knowledge, they haven't been opened yet, but I might be wrong about that. I haven't been down in about a week. The the people down in that area are members of the community. They're suffering from health conditions, concussions, addiction, all sorts of problems that need city resources to address them. And the city has the resources to address them. I read an article in the Morning Call from October of 2023 that says that you're planning to spend about $600,000 to make a pickleball rink arena. I don't even know what it's called, a pickleball court. I never played pickleball. I'm a younger person, but I think what might be more important for this community would be those people who work around here and bring value to this community. A lot of them born and raised in this community who left and then come back and can't afford to live here anymore but don't want to leave because they're so attached to this area. Those people work in this area. Institutions like the business we were talking about earlier wouldn't be able to run without people working for Pennsylvania's absurdly low minimum wage in our businesses around this entire area. That's not even to mention that there's 365,000, what I read, allotted to replacing a police armored cruiser with a sound cannon on top of it, seems like. I'm not sure what that police cruiser would be used for, except for getting people out of that encampment. Doesn't seem like the most efficient use of resources. I think a more efficient use of resources would be bringing these people food, Narcan, any kind of resources that would help them get back to a stable position. These people are human beings, and they are working very hard to keep themselves alive and afloat. At the very least, there you could appoint a liaison or a commission to pr- provide clear messaging to the homeless encampments. And further than that, you could provide actual cleaning committees that you could pay and provide resources, or even a volunteer cleaning committee that would just be given funds. There's lots and lots of solutions to this, and I could stand here all night suggesting them, but the main thing is this is a problem that can't be ignored. It can't be pushed under the rug. These people, what they need is care and resources and, frankly, love. That stuff has to be given so that they can basically recover from whatever they're suffering from and reintegrate into our society. This recovery is possible, and we should make it more possible. We shouldn't have overflowing homeless shelters that are closed in the middle of March while it's getting cold out. Weather's been up and down. But we should have the resources, and we can give the resources to take care of these people. I think they should be redirected from these projects that are glitzy and worth talking about to stuff that's actually going to help our community and help the most vulnerable people in our community. Even people who, like myself, I'm not homeless, but I'm on the verge of it. And I talk to many other unemployed people in this area in their mid-20s, like me, who are on the verge of homelessness. And what you're telling us is that as soon as we can't afford to stay here, the cops are going to come, put their boot on our head, and knock us out, send us out of the county. So if that's not the message you want to send to the unemployed folks and the young folks in this community, then I suggest giving more money and more resources towards the homeless encampments. Thank you.
Was there anyone else to the left who wants to make a comment? We did not have a chance to speak tonight.
Great. We could do better.
Sorry. No one else to the left? Anyone else in the wide center? I'll start in Verdak.
All right, thank you to the chair and to the council for hearing us out on this. I know that you guys are going to bring this up later, so I'd like to just start with some basic details so that it's on record and so that you guys have the context for why we're here before you end up responding. So starting with the basic details, we were alerted by the residents of the encampment of these notices. I have one right here. It's obviously pretty torn up just because it was pretty hard to take off, but it, Valerie read it earlier, essentially saying that the tent and any other items would be disposed of by April 3rd. We've seen several of these notices on all of the camps, on all of the tents past Mincy Trail Bridge. Not on the Fahey Bridge encampments, which was a misunderstanding earlier. We saw also that there was one that declared a vehicle, it declared one of the tents a vehicle and said that the vehicle was abandoned. The vehicle declaration is not accurate of the tent. I understand why it was declared a vehicle, but in this case it would be a shelter, and it would be legally declared a home because it is currently being used as a shelter. It is occupied by a person within the tent. Therefore, the police can neither search nor seize within the tent without any objects within the tent without a warrant. Notice of abandon also requires a longer notice than the apparent 5 days available to the residents to remove their property. Now, I'm under the impression that it may have been up to 14 days, but we're not sure of that so far. We understand, and also if it was 14 days, it would still not be enough of a notice of abandon for a shelter declared legally as a home, which we believe this is. We also understand that there is trash present in the area, and it is understandable that we do want this cleaned up as well. So we would be able to organize a cleanup around it for sure. But I absolutely cannot do so by Friday. I only received information about this pretty much yesterday. So at least we're asking that first off, at least you postpone this until Earth Day. Organizations like ours are able to get a lot of people out for cleanups on Earth Day. I've historically seen 50 people show up from a local college back in my hometown. We had a lot of people show up. We had a lot of hands to clean up trash that could be almost as extensive as this encampment. And if we postpone it until Earth Day, we could maybe get a sizable amount of people out there. Now, second off, our ask is for the bathrooms to be reopened because we have heard that there are issues of the cleanliness of the bathrooms as well, and we are willing to pay for some of the cleaning to be done for those bathrooms, but we really need those bathrooms opened because that does contribute also to the amount of trash that happens in these encampments. The homeless people from these encampments have been banned from the local Wawa, and aside from that, the closest bathroom is the one on Sand Island, so they have no access to bathrooms, leading to them having to bag their feces up in the middle of the woods, obviously contributing to the trash crisis. So this is another issue that we would like to work on, and aside from that, I feel like there is other information that I could definitely provide, but I'm not remembering all of it at this moment. Either way, I hope that this can be resolved. I hope that you guys come to a conclusion about this, and I know that we've also been speaking with Chief Cott and are willing to work about work on cleaning up this the trash works. So, thank you.
Do you mind giving your name for the record for the clerk?
Chase.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the Wide Center who wanted to make comment on anything we're not voting on this evening? Yes, ma'am, right in front.
This has to do with Terry Kloiber, Bethlehem, Grandview Boulevard, Bethlehem. This has to do with my Bethlehem app. I still haven't quite figured it out. I sent a note in on March 29th. It said, ever since BAHX purchased this plot of land at the old Bennett's lot, the trash has never been cleaned up. The previous owner would clean it regularly, and now this trash blows across the lot to the fence, then gets under the fence and blows into the neighbor's yards. Can the owner be tasked with cleaning the property up? So the service center wrote back and said, this is located in the city of Allentown. The address is clearly 2300 West Broad Street, Bethlehem. Next notice from Bethlehem Service Center says, please note the status of your service request has been completed and your service request is now closed. So I wrote back and I said, the fence is located along Bascom Street, which is Bethlehem. Please take care of this. Then I got another note back, said, we've notified our city department that handles these types of issues. However, the property is located in Allentown. You will also want to reach out to the City of Allentown Sweeps Department, which handles these types of issues in their city. So I wrote back and I said, this property is located on Broad Street in Bethlehem. Only one quarter of the property is Allentown, three quarters of the property is Bethlehem. The address is 2251 2299 West Broad Street, Bethlehem, PA 18018. Thanks for the update. The department that handles this has been notified. However, the main property address is also in Allentown. I would recommend also notifying them as well of the concern. So that was very frustrating. And then I wrote back, I made another complaint a week, a couple days later, whatever, and I used the address 401 to 499 Bascom Street, which is the fence, clearly in Bethlehem, right behind my brother's house, which is Bethlehem, Mary Jo's house, which is Bethlehem, all of that. And I said, trash along this fence, along Bascom Street, Bethlehem. And I sent pictures of both of these. Please have the owner clean it up. Previous owner always cleaned it up. The new owner doesn't anything. And this is the multi-billionaire BAHX, Norton Herrick, who we're fighting against for this property to keep the building to a minimum in there. He cannot keep his own property clean. He's got more than enough money to do this and take care of it. The previous owner was whoever owned the land. They had someone come out once a month at least and clean up the trash. Now, you walk down the alley, there's trash all along the fence. There's trash from that blows under the fence, and it's up along the neighbor's houses right in the back. I mean, it's awful. And as far as I'm concerned, this app is awful. And we all know that, I think. But the response to have to go to Allentown, I'm sorry, this is not Allentown. This is a Bethlehem problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Anyone else in the White Center? Go to Mr. Shire.
Good Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. I want to apologize because this is going to be somewhat speculative, but it's important and timely. There was a meeting in this room yesterday at 3:30 p.m., which unfortunately I was not able to attend. But it concerns a meeting between the city and neighbors, as I understand it, about a proposed development on the west side. It's a little confusing as to whether it's Rouse Street or Hanover Street or both, but what I'm gleaning from emails is that somebody wants to build townhouses on an alley that's 12 feet wide. And the city, according to these emails, has come up with an interpretation that this can happen as a matter of right, and they don't have to go through the Planning Commission or the Zoning Hearing Board. My guess would be that, now this is really my guess, but that the city is taking the position, since they are on an alley, the usual dimensional variances do not apply. If that's the case, it does remind me of our current President of the United States, who has his own interpretations of laws. And in any case, this is something I need to follow up on and and determine what exactly is the case. But I just wanted to bring it up here so that we all start thinking about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Anyone else in the wide center? Mr. Faber.
Harry Faber. So first, I would like to talk about the last meeting, just briefly. I also would like to talk about Mr. Hackett's comments from a few meetings ago, where he talked about wanting to minimize public comment. And I do respect, actually, when, if you go back and listen, I agreed with most of the things he said that night. But I disagree, and the reason I'm addressing last meeting is because we don't have this back and forth. We get to come speak, you listen to us twice, and then you guys get to go about doing your own business. I do wish that it was more participatory. I wish that we got to engage, you guys got to engage, and we would more of a back and forth. I think that's how a democracy should be. But nonetheless, I do believe that the things I heard in response to my last public comment were kind of silly. And I understand that the way I said it was, oh, you guys are voting to increase your own wages, and it would be for the incoming council. But the way it sounded was, oh, poor us having to do something like this. There's never a good time ever to vote to increase our own wages. And that's just not true. A good time would be after you decrease the cost of living and you increase the quality of life. I think you bake a bigger pie, you get a bigger piece. I think that's just natural. And I think that to say, oh, it's so hard to come up here and do this type of thing, when people over the past few months who are immigrants, who are deeply affected by the Israeli regime and the Trump regime, I mean, over the last few weeks, I have a few names written down, but students, activists, even professors have been disappeared, such as Mahmoud Khalil, Ramisia Azturk, Mamadou Tal, Ali Reza Daroudi, Badar Khan Suri, Yun Xiao Chung, Ranjani Srinivasan, and Zhao Feng Wang. I mean, these are people that are students, academics, bright members of their communities that have been abducted by a regime, disappeared, and we have people of our own community coming up here, putting their face out there, their names out there, speaking their truth about their fear and their struggles and about what's going to be coming next. And I think that's hard, because they're actually under threat. They're risking their lives by coming out here speaking, especially, I mean, at the meeting a few weeks ago, or I guess a few meetings ago, I mean, we had immigrants come up here, and ICE comes, and plain clothes, I mean, that's the case of what happened with Rumisa Osterk. She was approached in Boston by a bunch of plainclothes officers and abducted. And this is happening in our country. This isn't in Russia or China or Cuba or North Korea. This is in America, in cities bigger and smaller than Bethlehem. And that's a real concern for not just me. I mean, I come here, and I'm not an illegal immigrant. My father was an immigrant from Austria, but I was born here. But the way it happens is, okay, you start with a group, a population such as illegal immigrants. Okay, then you go to descendants of illegal immigrants or green card holders. And now that violence is normalized. The next thing you know, it's anybody who speaks ill. And that's how we descend into fascism. If we normalize violence against any people, that violence can then be normalized against us. So besides that, I also just wanted to talk a little bit about Palestine. A day ago, Netanyahu declared that Israel will escalate their massacres until Hamas leaves. Then they will enact Trump's plan to ethnically cleanse everyone in Gaza. Israel's plan is first increase pressure and negotiate under fire, which is code word for massacre civilians. Then they want to force Hamas to disarm and leave Gaza, which is their homeland. And again, Hamas isn't just some billionaire bureaucrats that are taking up arms. These are people who have been oppressed and have been colonized and in an open-air prison for over 20 plus years, and they have taken up arms, which is their right under international law, against their occupiers and the colonizers, which have been violently dispossessing them, oppressing them, you name it. And then after that, they said even after Hamas is gone, they're planning to occupy Gaza and enact Trump's plan, which is ethnic cleansing. There's no longer any room for speculation or debate about intention. Israel revealed a plan all along, erasing Gaza's population and stealing land. This dismantles nearly 2 years of Zionist propaganda and genocidal denial. It was never about self-defense or Hamas or hostages. It was always about colonization.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Was there anyone else in the Wide Center, Ms. Yarantalis?
Stephen M. Stalick, I can't resist, but
with your permission,
I have April Fool joke number two. The citizens of Bethlehem award every member of council for their work at A+. End of joke. My comments now are, in effect, concerned with the election coming up in May, city council election. So I'll read accordingly. Some years back, I used the term Parsifal effect to describe some members of council. I repeat it tonight because some council members, in my estimation, are guilty of the same effect today. To review, Parsifal is a very moving and profound opera by Wagner, where the knights of the Round Table are assembled in the presence of the Holy Grail as the beam of light descends upon them, bestowing with them special gifts. It seems that some clergy, when ordained, and some elected officials, when sworn in, feel they become imbued with this special light. But unfortunately, they are not aware that gravity keeps them grounded like the rest of us common citizens. Past meetings under the leadership of the likes of Del Grasso and Schwader are in sharp contrast to meetings of today. Meetings then were unusual because of the free interaction between council and citizens on issues of interest, since citizens interact verbally on issues during the formal meeting. Some council members then were known to socially mingle with citizens before and after this regular meetings. In today's meetings, the space in front of the council table is treated by council members as no man's land. along with the absence of verbal exchange during the meeting. To determine the validity of my observations, I checked with a few long-term residents familiar with council meetings and found confirmation from them for my beliefs. In the past years, meetings were well attended by local citizens, which included healthy discussions and exchanges between citizens and those they elected. They appeared to be in the style of the classic form of the town hall type meeting. Today, it appears to be meeting by council as required under the third class city code, with citizens allowed to be there as audience. A number of attendees have complained the council pays no attention to them, and some of these people have ceased to come for that reason and made that verbally known. And in some instances, council members have exhibited subtle hostility toward the speakers because of their comments. And some of these responses by council have had disastrous effects, which may come up later. What is the solution? Educate the voting citizenry so as to the qualities of those seeking office. For new office seekers, candidates should be elected who have the longest city residency. And for those seeking re-election, the electorate should be advised of the results of a recent citizens' opinion of these council members' past performance. And that way only can you educate the electorate as to maybe council can come back to where what it used to be. Thanks for your permission.
Thank you, Mr. Antalis. I believe in the very center. Yes.
My name is Susan Jones. I live on Wall Street, and I'll be very brief. I listened to the young man that was speaking about the need for bathroom facilities. I worked for many years at the Moravian Bookshop, and I give tours now at the Central Moravian Church to accommodate, you know, we had an enormous influx of tourists, especially at Christmas time. And the fact that there's no facilities at all for people visiting this town is very off-putting, and a lot of people have complained. And I think if you want this town to live up to its designation now, bringing people in from all over because of the UNESCO designations, that you could do so. I know years ago I was in Alexandria, Virginia, and they had a little office right in the main street, and it was the welcoming center. There were bathrooms. They gave you a little map, and it made the trip very delightful. And even if it was only open during business hours for the tourists when the stores were open, I think it would make a big difference. Perhaps even in the new garage. But somewhere downtown, I think that would be a kind of thing we should invest in. And the other thing is a very brief question. If you're moving these people from under the bridge, where do you expect them to go? That's it.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make a comment who has not had a chance to yet?
I will not be giving, neither will I be giving the address, if that's okay. I was going to mention, there's been a couple of things that have been said that I want to make note of. I do not have my notes with me, so bear with me. But one of the things that I've been talking about with my family has been the largely untalked about, at least widely, notion of what do we do when I start staking people here? And what does that look like in terms of planning and like response? Because even if we know our rights, that doesn't necessarily mean that ICE is going to play fair, and it hasn't. They've taken people from their homes. Even just as a recent, there was a man who was taken, and he was dropped off in another country, and there was no jurisdiction, there was no way to bring him back. They were just like, okay, well, you, there you are. No rule of proceeding, no First Amendment rights, no Miranda rights. I think it's important that we talk about this, but also in terms of the homeless encampment, I think it's egregious that we should be talking about this again, but it seems like since last time there has been another miscommunication, and I feel like we should have a liaison in place between the city and the people living there, because it produces an insane amount of stress and levels of just fear that are unnecessary. These are people who still deserve our love, our attention, our respect. Not only that, but also I think it's interesting that the sweeps are being done in the way that they are, or at least that they're being communicated in the way that they are. I don't think it should be asked of every citizen here to be cleaning up your mess, because technically it is your mess. You're not giving these people the spaces that they need, nor providing the resources that they need to be able to live like dignified human beings. That's not the right word. Sorry, I'm like really nervous right now. But I just think it's important that we're treating this with the respect it deserves and with the care it deserves. It sort of seems like not being taken as seriously. We've talked about this multiple times. I mean, there's people living there since winter. So, yeah.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the center?
Yes.
Hello. I'd also like to speak for me about the homeless encampments, and mention just a few things to reiterate. Been a lot of miscommunication and just a divide between what the residents of that encampment know, what the police know, what the city hall here knows. Just it creates like a lot of fear and a lot of rifts where people don't know if they're going to have a bed the next day or if they're going to come home from work. And any of their belongings are going to even just exist or not just be in some trash bin somewhere. We've confirmed that these tents are not abandoned. Only one is abandoned, and that is the one that's closest to the bridge, as far as we are aware so far. And even the information that the residents received to call and sort of get some assistance just got sent to voicemail multiple times. So we're just not providing these residents with any sort of information or any sort of, you know, outreach to even get help or have any sort of voice. In fact, it wasn't until tonight where I spoke with the officer here, and we actually did. We were able to, like, quell a lot of fears and concerns and get some really, like, actually actionable information that would, you know, reduce stress levels for the residents of the encampment, and even the people who are trying to do community service to help out. You know, we want to clear the trash out. We want to restore the bathrooms and have, you know, just basic cleanliness and resources for these people. But there was a very quick timeline and notes that seemed very aggressive and basically seemed like we were trying to remove them without any representation. So that's not to say. Thank you.
Do you mind giving your name for the record? If you're
Joshua Hoffman.
Thank you. Short minutes. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment who's not had an opportunity? Yes. Yes.
Good evening, Council. My name is Jennifer McDermott. I live on Southside Mountain on S Street. I've been a longstanding homeless advocate since at least 2014 around the area. Camden, New Jersey. I'm from New Jersey originally. I've got a lot of experience, and I'm basically a boots on the ground type of a person. I don't normally come to council meetings. But I did want to reiterate to you, there are many things on the board right now. The most important, obviously, the sweeps that we did hear about less than 48 hours ago, which I would ask that the council provide some sort of, not guarantee, but we will be literally, upon leaving this building, in touch with folks at the encampment that we've been in touch with and been serving for quite a while here. And they are terrified. We told them, you should come to the meeting, speak, let folks hear your voice. They're too scared. They're terrified that they will be swept. And like the last speaker did say, that we have received some, good information from the chief of police that we'll be happy to report back. I'll be feeding, I feed people. It's just what I do. To have a homemade meal when you've been living in a tent, it lands pretty well, I have to say. I was just one of those things that I do provide. With the help of the community, I want you to know that there are dozens of people waiting to hear. They're not doing the sweeps, are they? That are waiting to hear from us once we leave here, that have become very involved. They're very concerned for our neighbors down in the encampment. Yes, there are issues. There are many people that are willing to step up and help with the trash and so on and so forth. I wound up delivering thousands of dollars worth of goods that were donated by the Bethlehem area community. My porch became, all down my walkway, my kitchen, I was inundated with boxes because one of the folks in the encampment reached out and said, we've got no food, we need food, et cetera. There are people without tents, it was freezing, they needed propane, this type of a thing. And the community answered, like I've never seen before in all of my years of doing this. So. I want to just make you aware that there are many people in this community, that there are a few of us here tonight, but there are dozens, if not more, behind us that are willing to step up and continue to help serve these folks and their needs. And I just appreciate your time. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I really hope that there is a better way to communicate about this so that people aren't thrown into a tailspin. The last 48 hours have been a bit daunting because we really don't know what's going to be happening in a couple of days, and the thought of an encampment being swept is really the stuff of nightmares to me. So I do appreciate your time very much tonight. Thank you for hearing me. Thanks.
Thank you. Was there anyone else who wants to speak who hasn't had a chance to yet in the center? Was there anyone to the right? Yes.
Hi, my name is Brian Anderson. I live in Prunesburg, but I've also been helping the homeless people at the Bethlehem camps. I want to first go by what people might think a homeless person is. They describe them as somebody who doesn't want to work and wants stuff for free. That is not true, I'm here to tell you. Most of the people down in the Bethlehem homeless camps along the canal do work. Some work two and three jobs, but yet cannot make enough money to get an apartment. The problem is most employers that hire a homeless person pay them less than what they pay their other employees because they think they're not worth the same amount of money, which does not allow them to get the financial goals to afford affordable housing. Some homeless people in this situation are because they made a bad choice in life because they were young, did something stupid like text, got in a car accident, somebody died or something, which prevents them from getting any kind of help from housing assistance like that, because from what I understand, if you have a felony, you cannot get housing help. Some have medical problems. Some just had bad luck. They lost a job. They family kicked them out, whatever the situation might be. I've also heard people in Bethlehem, when I used to rent in Bethlehem, complain that the homeless people cause property values to drop, crime levels to rise, and the city looks undesirable. I'm here to tell you that very little of the crime is actually committed by the homeless. If you watch the news, more of it's committed by the people that own a house than it is our homeless people. As far as keeping the areas clean and stuff like that, I work with a community group that we went out and reached with the Bethlehem homeless. About 2 weeks ago, we went down to Sand Island. We did a trash pickup. We picked up 12 bags of trash, all volunteers, nobody paid. So that is proof that they're willing to go out there and help keep everything clean. I believe that we need more affordable housing and less regulations on how to get help into getting back on your feet. But yet, I agree it should be regulated. I'm here to tell you basically that if 1% of the 200 people that I heard live along the canal are paying taxes to Bethlehem, Bethlehem makes $20,000 a year off of their taxes. If we were to sweep all these people out or make them leave, that would cause Bethlehem to raise the taxes of other residents in the city. So we wouldn't want to really hurt anybody by kicking out people that are contributing to the city. Some of the basic needs that your homeless people want is basically the first thing, dignity. They want to be felt like they're treated just as equal as everybody else in the city. They want a roof over their head, heat, food, security. It's funny that we can have a violent criminal that commits a crime, goes to jail. They're afforded all this by our government, but yet we can't take care of our own homeless. We can't offer them any kind of security, heat, food. You might say, okay, there's soup kitchens out there and shelters that help. Our shelters right now and food soup kitchens are overworked. The homeless community has gotten so large that they cannot even keep up with it. So this is where I'm asking the city to help by stepping in and help everybody. And then last thing I want to say is that nobody can 100% say that they're never going to be homeless. It could happen to anybody. I guarantee one person in this room will end up homeless before they die. It just happens the way the economy is. And if you cherish this city as much as I did, and then all of a sudden you became homeless and the city turned its back on them, how would you feel? Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else to the right that wants to make a comment that didn't have a chance? Good.
Thank you. My name is Ron. I'd like to start by thanking Bethlehem City Council for being very accessible to residents and constituents here. Very different than United States Representative Ryan McKenzie and members of our U.S. Senate. Thanks to the inaction of our U.S. Senators and U.S. Representative Ryan McKenzie, our federal minimum wage is still below $8 per hour. My understanding is that the minimum wage set by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is also below $8 an hour. And there is cities that have the power to raise those. Bethlehem, it seems like, is not one of those cities, is my understanding, but I'm no expert on this situation. But from this calculation, a worker making minimum wage would have to work somewhere between 260 to 270 hours a month just towards rent. That just to afford, you know, a one-bedroom apartment here in the city of Bethlehem. And that does not seem sustainable. And it's not that, I'm not putting this at the fault of anyone on Bethlehem City Council. This is a structural problem that comes from, like I mentioned, inaction from our U.S. Senators and our U.S. Representative, Ryan McKenzie, who seem to have have hatred towards low-income workers throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and throughout the city of Bethlehem. And I would like to express a lot of gratitude to everyone here that expressed concern and advocacy towards the most vulnerable amongst us, ranging from the plight that my community of is facing, whether it's, you know, migrant workers or individuals facing housing insecurity. You know, there is such thing as no-fault evictions, right? where people can get evicted and then be put on the street. There is such thing as, you know, and poverty, you know, and no fault of their own. Like people had mentioned, times are tough, and with everything that's going on in the federal government, to really inflict more and more harm on the most vulnerable amongst us. You know, organizations like Food Not Bombs, the Queer Trans Lehigh Valley Mutual Aid Network, the great work that is done towards providing, you know, basic solidarity and mutual aid towards the most vulnerable amongst us is truly what is gonna protect and keep everyone safe here in the city of Bethlehem. And I would love to see how we can work together in coalition and collaborate with one another to really make those things happen, because we desperately need those things to happen, because things are really bad here. People are losing their jobs. Custodian, you know, janitorial staff are losing their jobs because budget cuts, you know, and people that are halfway towards getting their pension are being viewed as disposable and no longer gonna have access to their pension. So I just, you know, have an open call to everyone here in the room to continue the great work, the great advocacy, loving thou neighbor without any exceptions, and please resist any kind of divisive rhetoric to divide worker amongst worker that coming in from, you know, billionaire propaganda or the Department of Homeland Security. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else that missed or wants to make comment before we move on? So that's going to conclude our first public comment tonight. Moving on to our second public comment. This is for any ordinance or resolution that's being voted on this evening. We did not have anyone sign up in advance for the second public comment, so again, I'll go around the room. Was there anyone to the left who wants to make comment on any ordinance or resolution? Anyone in the center? Mr. Faber?
This is my second time in a row speaking three times. Turkey, double turkey. All right. I want to talk about the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistant Grant. I hadn't done some research and I spoke about it at the last meeting, but it provides local governments with funding to support a range of program areas, including law enforcement, prosecution, indigent defense, courts, crime prevention and education, corrections and community corrections, drug treatment and enforcement, planning, evaluation, technology improvement, crime victim and witness initiatives, mental health programs, and related law enforcement and corrections programs, including behavioral programs and crisis intervention teams, and implementation of state crisis intervention court proceedings and related programs or initiatives, including but not limited to mental health courts, drug courts, veterans courts, and extreme risk protection order programs. Bethlehem's receiving $33,577 from the Justice Assistant Grant. And we heard the presentation from Chief Cott at the last meeting. And I really want to urge council to reconsider this plan. And I'm sure you put a lot of effort into it. And I spoke in some criticism last time, but I'm gonna reiterate. We need to be thinking about the precedent that this will set. For those of you who are unaware, it is to install cameras at two intersections. I do not remember the names of the intersections, and for that I apologize. But these intersections already have cameras, I might add. But right now, as people are being disappeared for their political beliefs, as I mentioned earlier, do we really think this is a good idea to invest in surveillance cameras? Who does this actually benefit? We, the people, don't actually benefit from more surveillance. We don't get access to it. It's not like it's going to be live streamed for the entire public to see from these cameras. The only people who it really benefits is those who are looking to surveil, capture, abduct. And I'm not saying that Bethlehem PD is going to abduct, you know, our citizens, but ICE is doing that, maybe not in Bethlehem right now, but that is the plan. That is what they're doing across the country. And we haven't passed any welcoming city legislation or anything like that. We haven't really told our people that here we're standing against ICE. We've refused to take a stance. Yeah, it's just a terrible look. It looks like you guys are increasing surveillance and going to corroborate with ICE and participate in the disappearance of our marginalized communities. And I'm sorry if you disagree, but this really only further helps create a more total authoritarian surveillance state. There's a lot of better things we heard about the homeless encampments. And as I have read, there's plenty of things we can use these $33,000 for, such as education or drug prevention or drug, where did I write it? There's so much other stuff other than surveillance, really. We could create a team to help clean, these areas. We could, there's so much. It is purposefully vague. And on the website, you actually can't look at, if you click the link, you can't look at the Q&A section. It was down, which is odd. And I wasn't the only one who tried. But there's so many other things other than, again, increasing surveillance. It doesn't benefit the people. The people need reassurance. They need action, especially those who are the most impoverished. And it just, again, I can't reiterate this enough. This doesn't help anybody. It only helps catch people and put them behind bars, which is inhumane. I'm very against the prison industrial system. We have in Northampton County, it is a privately owned prison, and they make a lot of money from, you know, the slave labor that is being used there. So really, let's think of something else. I mean, there's so much stuff that addresses crime. And how do you address crime? You address poverty, and you address lack of education. And like I said earlier, we can use these funds for educational programs, even if it's like after-school tutoring. I mean, we don't know. I don't have a personal connection with all the Bethlehem police. But guess what? If you have the police, you know, participating in educational programs, after-school programs for those who parents are working multiple jobs and they don't have, you know, supervision or can't afford. I mean, there's so many things we can do that's actually benefiting, helping the community, opposed to just getting more cameras just to catch more regular people and put them behind bars and stuff. Thank you.
Mr. Faber? Is there anyone else in the Wide Center who wants to make comment on anything that we're voting on this evening? Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. You've heard this before, but there's a new paragraph, so. I hope that you will not vote to change the zoning for 11 and 15 West Garrison Street from residential to central business district. I understand that it will increase the efficiency of the apartment building proposed around the corner on New Street, but sacrificing these two buildings is too high a price to pay. 15 West Garrison in particular looks to be a solid brick building. I guess it was during the days of urban renewal when the area bounded roughly by Main, Broad, and Center Streets to Union Boulevard was rezoned from residential to central business district. But some city planner evidently had the vision to exempt the unit block of West Garrison Street. It is a block of small single and twin houses that go together and are relatively affordable housing. I find it to be rather charming, actually. If it were in Europe, some American tourists would very likely find it so. Later, some of the broader area, particularly along Center Street, was downzoned from CBD to residential. Excuse me. Here's the new paragraph. It has been argued that these two buildings will be demolished anyway. I find this rather puzzling. Excuse me. For if the rezoning is denied, the developers would be left with a vacant lot. It could not be used for the apartment building because it would have to be joined to the lot of the apartment building, And it is my understanding that two different zones cannot coexist within the same lot. And if the lot were vacant, it couldn't be sold as a residence anymore or rented out as a residence. It would then, could not then contribute anymore to affordable housing in the city. Bethlehem is attractive to developers, that we all know. If we are not careful, what is attracting people to the city will be lost. There is a lesson in the townships. People first move there for the space, peace, and quiet. But as more and more people move there, there was less and less space, peace, and quiet. Similarly, people are not moving here because they love six-story apartment buildings. They are moving here for other reasons. But as we allow more and more apartment buildings, these other reasons will be less and less prominent. North Philadelphia is an example of this. If we are not going to significantly change the character of Bethlehem, we have to draw the line somewhere. Even though the rezoning is only for two buildings, this is a good place to start and preserve the total character of the unit block of West Garrison Street. Who knows? Future historians might someday say, this was the moment when Bethlehem decided to preserve its character. Thank you.
Mr. Shatter, was there anyone else who wanted to make comment?
The Olympic Hospital systems here in the Lehigh Valley, St. Luke's and LVHN, and they have come together with us and met with us and the police and our community partners in the Bethlehem Health Bureau to talk about how we can better service our residents who have mental health crises. Everyone knows there's a lot of mental health crises out there, and there are not a great deal of services that are easily accessed, but there are services. So we're working with the bigger systems and the medium and the smaller sized organizations in Bethlehem to make that cohesive network, if I can call it that, so we can refer easily. And then the other things that we are working on with these same community partners, we have the hospital systems and all of the other organizations, is then where are the gaps that we all notice? Where are the gaps? Why do there continue to be, is it difficult to get housing? Why are these people unable to get mental health? Or if they do get mental health, why does it fall off so quickly? Where are the gaps in services? And how can we collectively, since we're hospitals and health bureaus and cities and organizations, how can we collectively figure out how to fix that? We're having a lot of conversations about this. So I'm sure it seems sometimes that if you don't see us out there and if people don't know what community connections mean, it's because I say, hey, my name's Binet and I'm from the Health Bureau. I guarantee you most of the people are going to go know Binet, they're going to know Carissa, they're going to know some of our other outreach workers, they're going to know Riley. We are out there and have a presence on a weekly basis. So there really is a lot going on that may not be so obvious, but I encourage, we are going to try to get up that information, however we decide that's going to look, get up information where you can find out exactly what's going on. If you feel nervous that there's going to be some kind of sweep, don't post it, because you're going to scare a lot of people if you're not sure that's going to happen, and I can tell you it's pretty likely that is not going to happen. So that is not in the city's plans, not right now in any way, shape, or form, but we do need regular outreach. So that's what community connections is. That's what a big part of my team does. I know that Chief also has a lot to say about, you know, the law enforcement part of it and that part of it. But does anyone have any?
We're not opening it up to
questions.
Sorry. Yeah, I understand you're on a roll there, and yeah. I appreciate that, but.
We're still in new business, yeah. And so we each kind of get a chance I just want to say how much I appreciate your sharing all this information, because I mean there are even things that you said tonight that I wasn't really aware of,
and we have to be better about.
So I think the communication piece, which is something that several commenters had brought up, is something we need to continue to strive to improve. And but thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And if I can just interject, sure. Councilwoman, I do welcome anyone who wants to continue conversations after we adjourn the meeting. we'll all be here. It's just we're now in the agenda for tonight, but and I'll speak on that when I speak a little bit more during new business. But everyone is invited to stay after the meeting or have conversations one-on-one once we adjourn the agenda tonight.
Thanks. And I know that Chief Pratt is up there, and so some of this does have to do with messages that were posted by the police. I would say that having seen the message, having seen a photograph of it, I could understand where there'd be some misinterpretation or some concern about it, and maybe there could be some work on maybe rephrasing or reframing these notices. But the one I actually had the question about was the vehicle. Are you aware of this sticker? Could you explain that?
I was just made aware of it today, right before City Council, when I went out and met with some folks, and that is going to be looked into and addressed. I have no rhyme or reason why somebody would think that was a good idea, other than maybe they thought it was abandoned property and know that we have these abandoned, you know, vehicle stickers, but I have no rhyme or reason why that would have happened, Councilwoman.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you'll be able to figure it out. You'll find the officer and have a chat with him about the reasoning behind that. And so I think that Ms. Berger was pretty clear about, you know, again, it would be helpful if people had concerns, they could reach out to the police or to Community Connections before sort of spreading around information that might not be entirely accurate.
Absolutely. My email address is easy to find. It's on the city website. It may take me a day or two to respond. I'm pretty good at checking and getting through all my emails that I get, but we're pretty responsive, and we will get back to people, and we will do a better job about communicating so the community has an idea as to what's going on. Because I understand that it's very, very scary for people to experience that kind of sheer dread that there's going to be a sweep down there.
Great. I appreciate that. And I think we all learned a lot tonight, and I really appreciate that. And our emails are also on the website. Appreciate hearing from folks, and that's certainly how I was made aware of it as well. I do check my email several times a day during lunch break, coffee break, things like that. So please feel free to reach out to me as well. I appreciate that. I'm done with this portion of my new business. My only other new business, really, I do want to say that I am absolutely horrified, furious, disgusted by what's happening in terms of the disappearing of people off of our streets, regardless of their immigration status. No warrant, no charges, just literally being shuttled to some place in Louisiana, some private prison in Louisiana. It's disgusting. It's horrific. I feel like everybody else in here helpless, because there is nothing that I can physically do to bring, like, Ms. Osterk back, or the gentleman from Maryland who they now admit they took mistakenly, but, well, gee, we don't have any way to bring him back. Too bad. Sorry. It's a nightmare. It is an absolute nightmare. It is an absolute dissolution of our rights, of due process. Our Constitution is being trampled on, and I want to make it very clear that is something that I am thinking about constantly. On a sort of semi-positive note, I just want to thank everyone who came out for Transgender Day of Visibility yesterday and the flag raising, which was powerful and a reminder that you know, we can show up, and folks can be visible here in Bethlehem. You know, I don't talk about this publicly very much, but my daughter is trans, and she I'm going to say it, she told me I could say it. She happens to be a newly minted officer in the Navy. She's coming up on just a year in the Navy. And so if anyone knows what it feels like to have a family member with a target on their back, I certainly can say that I am, you know, very much in league with folks along those lines. So the injunction has sort of unclenched my jaw, but for the most part, I worry about my daughter, who's all the way across the country, pretty much 24 hours a day as well. So Transgender Day of Visibility was a really great chance for us all to come together. We talked about some ways that we might be able to update our human relations and non-discrimination ordinance and make sure that we are doing what we can within, you know, our little city here in our little bubble to make sure that that sense of welcoming and belonging here continues. So that's all I have. Thank you. Sorry. No, that was a long new business. Thanks for your indulgence.
No one needs to apologize. Any other new business from members of council? Something later.
While you're still standing right there, I'll follow up with you some more. So first of all, on the topic of the homeless encampment, I did respond to several people today on this topic, and when I got the first email about the fear of a sweep, I reached out to Chief Cott right away, and I responded in good faith with the information I received. I am wondering with the notices, because the initial communications I received did not have the notice photograph on it. I got one of them later. Are those the notices that are used because those are the notices that must be used, or because they're the most accessible to be used? You know, is the language on those notices dictated by policy or something like that?
So it's a courtesy. The boilerplate template that gets posted is a common courtesy to folks that if we are mistaken that the property is not abandoned, to either make notice with Community Connections or with the police department, or the officers will go back to the same location a day or two after doing the posting to see if anybody's around, to see if they're able to speak to anybody. They'll speak to neighbors to see if a tent is still occupied or not.
So I guess the question I have is the notice that I saw a photo of, and I think a couple people read tonight, didn't specify anything about abandoned property or if this isn't actually abandoned, please contact. I think the handwritten note did, but not the
right.
official notice. It was about tents not being permitted, which I understand is law. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure if there is an alternative notice that could be more directly indicating this is seen as abandoned property. Like, I didn't get that from what I read. So is there the opportunity to craft a notice that would be more along the lines of what seems to be the intent of clearing out abandoned property?
Absolutely. Because that is, you know, as I spoke to the individuals before the meeting, that is the intent here, is due to numerous complaints we received about the condition of Charlie's Clearing east of the Mincy Trail Bridge. That is the reason why we're going to be focusing with the Public Works Department on cleaning up that area.
Okay. I also wonder if, because there was some comment about that City Council seems pretty well informed about what the intentions were, and I can say, at least from my perspective, I was well informed because I received input from, or received concern from the community, and therefore was able to make contact and find out what was going on. So I'm wondering, obviously you cannot inform us about every single thing that the police or public works are going to do, but given that we know that this is a situation that can sometimes have breakdowns in communication or fear associated with it, is there the opportunity that you know, council could have a heads up when these notices are being posted?
Absolutely. There's always room for improvement, and like Ms. Berger said, we're really working on, there's a communication plan that the Health Bureau is looking into on better ways that we can communicate, not only within the city and with City Council, but with the community as well.
Yeah, and once that plan is enacted, then I would think that will provide plenty of opportunities for everyone to be informed. I'm looking forward to it. So this is, my request is sort of for in the interim period so that we can appropriately respond to people. And let me see. Sorry, my iPad just timed out with my notes. Okay, that was my questions for you. Thank you. In terms of the smart meters and associated apps, just a small follow-up question to what Councilwoman Kwiatek asked. Is there a benchmark? I recognize that the priority is the infrastructure and can support that. I'm wondering if there is a benchmark for what point the prioritization could allow for including looking at the app. Like, we're at 55%, I think you said. Are we looking to not move towards implementing a consumer-facing app or portal until 100%, or is it 80%? Like, is there a ballpark?
I don't. There isn't a benchmark per se. I think it's just a question of prioritizing what we're trying to do with our infrastructure and limited budget.
Are there opportunities in public infrastructure, like, for example, we're voting tonight on the technology-related grant funding for the police department. Is there similar grant funding out there for public utilities technology?
None that I know of. Not that we can't look. Most of the funding in the utility sphere is for hardware, pipes in the ground, meters, valves, pumps, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Technology, maybe there is, but specifically, we can certainly look into that.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that would be great, because I do recognize mm-hmm. that there's a lot of costs and implementation work associated with it, but I also, as somebody who uses that PPL portal a lot to analyze things, I'm like, it really would be nice to put out there for people. Thank you. Then a comment about the property, the BHX property, and it's straddling the city lines there. I'm concerned about that, not only because it sounds like it would be a frustrating experience for someone who's reporting an issue like trash on that property, but also in the event of an emergency, if somebody were to contact and say, this is my address, I need help, and give that address, is there going to be confusion in the call center about what police department or ambulance or fire or utility service even would respond if there's confusion about what jurisdiction that property lies in? I don't know who that question is for, but
I'll jump on that one.
So I do have that written down to look into exactly what happened there. It should have been handled. I'm not quite sure how exactly it's in our GIS system, so that's something I'll look into. But to answer your question, it happens all the time where there's an accident in the middle of the road there, and both Bethlehem and Allentown Police Department will respond and kind of point fingers at, no, it's your accident, it's our accident. It's but until it's figured out, both departments would respond in the case of an emergency. But I will look into that with the service center.
Okay. From a public works perspective, is it clear who is responsible for, like, let's say that there was a pipe break or something like that in the area, or a sinkhole that opened up or something? Is that clear within the teams?
I believe so. I mean, anything within the city limits is our responsibility to, in terms of all utilities, and we have that fairly clearly defined in our GIS and in all our mapping and all our infrastructure GIS mapping.
Okay, yeah, I And I would have thought that, but the app is where people would report things like that, right? Yeah, like, but, or
I mean, it's going into a call center, and those staff are interpreting where the mm-hmm. property is. In the case of us maintaining our facilities, our engineers would determine
Understood.
Where the location is and respond.
Okay. Thank you. And then my last new business comment is just a brief update that I am continuing work on data privacy conversations and policy conversations with the city administration as they relate to our residents' data and the data that this was initially sparked by conversations about immigration data, which we do not make a habit of storing at all, but just thinking about the climate of the United States right now and various populations and sensitivities that people may have or fears that people may have about their personal data. I am interested in that aspect of what we can do to protect our residents. So those conversations are continuing with city administration, and I hope to have some more updates to share about that soon.
Thank you. So. Any other new business from Councilwoman Ramsey Smith?
I have a couple questions. I think Mrs. Collins, I just have a few for you, if you don't mind. Before I ask questions, I just want to say thank you, especially to Renee and everybody who came tonight and spoke, and everyone who certainly obviously is concerned and doing for our out-of-house population. That's really gracious of you, and it makes me really great to meet so many great people in the community that have concern. I worked over 40 years with people who've been unhoused, and I know it's you know, it's really a challenge. It's very sad. It's so multi-dimensional, multi-level as far as all the issues that encompass being homeless. And I really commend everybody who's really out there trying to help those folks, and I hope that we can continue to do whatever it takes to try to address and get rid of this problem. So, Ms. Collins, I guess I just had a couple of questions. One thing is, do we have any time frame? I know there's a lot involved, but as far as the shelter goes, or like the gateway on the fourth, like any, are we looking at any time frame when we think that those things will come to fruition?
Sure, I'll start with gateway on fourth. We submitted our LIHTC application. It's a low-income housing tax credits, which make up the largest chunk of the capital stack for that project. So we submitted that application for phase one by the February 11th due date. So PHFA, the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency, is reviewing this now. That's a multi-month process. But if we are successful in the award, and by we, you know, obviously Lehigh Valley Industrial Park, LVIP, contributed $4 million to that project as a result of, you know, working with us through the Opening Doors Plan and their, you know, interest in advancing affordable housing and partnering with us. So big win already, $4 million from LVIP. And then Penrose is the developer doing the project. But we're obviously working hand in hand with them and, you know, committing city dollars as well from our HUD home allocation. But so if Penrose and the team is successful in the LIHTC award, there's a few other additional funding sources that we're currently, you know, helping them either as the applicant or just with letters of support for either local, state, or federal dollars. Phase one would then begin construction in 2026, I believe, is when the first construction would happen.
And when will we hear about the LIHTC grant? Is there a date that we will hear?
I'm not exactly sure. I want to say, I mean, it usually takes multiple months for the state agency to review it, so I want to say like summer, maybe fall, possibly.
Okay, all right. And then how about the shelter? Any time frame for the shelter?
Yeah, well, so as I mentioned, that also is in like the capital acquisition phase, I suppose you could say, you know, I think that it would be ambitious to think that it would be for, like, I think it would still be open in its current form temporarily for next shelter season, which would be the 2025-2026 season, so probably looking at the following year.
So they will be still using the
The temporary shelter for 25, 26, and then maybe 26, 27 have a permanent one in place?
Well, so construction for a project like that would probably, well, we're, one of the things we're talking about now is, can you get that done in between sheltering seasons, or is it going to be a long enough construction period that there might be a season in which we have to think about, like, is there an alternative while construction is underway? Those are, it's still being worked out.
So as far as the time, it sounds like it's not really, we don't have a clear time frame at this point for the shelter.
Definitely not for next shelter season.
Okay.
Like, it would not be open for next shelter season.
Okay, thank you. And then, let me see what else I want to ask. Oh, as far as the bathrooms, is there anything happening with public bathrooms that will be accessible, you know, downtown or near the...
Well, so the first thing I'll point out, there are actually public bathrooms currently in the North Street parking garage, which often gets overlooked, which I do think speaks to the fact that, you know, people don't necessarily like going to bathrooms in parking garages, and they're hard to maintain. So those do exist currently, but they are not particularly well used, it seems. But in terms of other conversations about other potential public bathroom options, we have had conversations recently with the Downtown Bethlehem Association at the request of some of the folks on that board about looking at a variety of infrastructure needs for the downtown, including bathrooms. So it's constantly been a part of the conversation. I don't have a solution for public bathrooms currently, but it is.
Is there any way we can advertise? Because I've told Mr. Fernstrom, like, I found many people aren't even aware of how they got the North Street garage, especially people from out of town. You know, I have to tell them. They don't.
How about the garage itself or the bathroom?
Yeah, the garage itself. people in the Lehigh Valley, but I'm just wondering, can we advertise, or is there a sign for the bathroom? Because I don't even know where it is. I use that garage a lot.
Yeah, so they're right in the, like, Lanta area.
Okay.
Where the Lanta...
Is there a sign?
Like,
I just wonder,
like, the bus station.
Maybe we need to just advertise it in a better way. Or...
Yeah, they, as Mr. Alcala is pointing out, they are maintained by Atlanta, so it's the Atlanta.
It's still the bus station.
So it's really for the bus station? It's really,
yeah, but
they're
public bathrooms.
It's public, okay. So it would be more up to Atlanta to really advertise it. Okay. And then my last question is about the meeting that someone brought up that occurred yesterday regarding Roche and Hanover Street, the multi-unit that they want to. Can you just give us an update on what transpired at that meeting? That would be you or...
Sure, yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. So the project is related to a property that fronts on Hanover Street. It's gone through a couple of iterations. They had gone to the Zoning Hearing Board multiple months ago with a different project. They withdrew that project. They then came back with a sketch plan for a different project that went to the Planning Commission in February, had its initial review process. At that point, there was a few aspects on the sketch plan that were identified that may have needed zoning relief. The developer asked for an interpretation on a particular zoning issue related to the lot size, effectively, and, you know, how we would interpret them choosing to put, like, townhouses on this existing property that has a two-family detached dwelling on it as well. We had made a zoning initial determination. It was appealed. We reviewed it. Our law bureau reviewed it. And ultimately, the decision on that particular issue was pretty clear. So on that particular issue, the applicant ended up withdrawing their zoning appeal. But, you know, the project itself is still, like, in the very early stages and going through, the land development and, you know, zoning review process. So it's not the case that the project is fully approved. It's only at the very early stages, really. We've only seen a sketch plan at this point. You know, the neighbors have been very, very actively involved from the beginning for many, many months, and are diving all the way in on a variety of issues. They've interacted with our office many times and were very responsive to their questions and their requests. And they were asking some pretty detailed questions about that one particular zoning issue, and asked to have a meeting about that said that, you know, I was there, our city solicitor was there, the mayor was there. You know, we listened to their concerns and also, you know, talked through with them, not only this particular issue, but just the process in general.
So it sounds like they still need to be going to possibly the zoning hearing board or the planning.
Oh, yes, certainly. Yeah, they haven't even submitted for land development yet. So a sketch plan is just a very preliminary review. Then zoning relief may happen. The land development will have a full planning commission review as well. So
all right, thank you.
A lot of pieces to that.
I guess the only other thing I'll say is, generally speaking, some people have addressed it. I know many people tonight is, you know, the state of affairs at the national level, and I know it's, you know, very concerning for all of us. And I think it's just important that we all just try to stay strong and stay united as much as we can. I know it's discouraging, but we just have to, you know, keep up the good fight. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other new business for members of council?
I do, Mr. President.
Mr. Callahan, go
ahead. First, I just want to apologize for not being there. I've been ill for the last 3 days. I don't know what bug's going around, but I got it. Ms. Collins, is there a way that we could have either the city, the parking authority, or Atlanta increase the signage for the area? Because I lived literally across the street from it, and I had no idea there was a bathroom there either.
I suppose we could talk with Atlanta about that.
Since it's a public bathroom, could we do some signage too for a public bathroom signage? Just to direct people like where to go?
Yeah, Mr. Alcala is telling me that we can have a discussion with Lanta about that and, you know, just check if they're willing to do that and what that might look like.
Who owns the bathroom facility?
The parking authority leases it to Lanta.
So the parking authority leases it to Lanta.
They do, but it is a public bathroom.
Mr. Ruffles,
that's my understanding.
Do you mind coming to a microphone, so Ms. Collins isn't relaying your words?
We built that as part of the North Street Garage project for the purpose of leasing and being operated by Atlanta. I don't believe it's officially public bathroom as to the general public that's in the downtown area, but it's certainly available to all the commuters that use the station. So that's why we'd have to have a conversation with Atlanta as to whether or not they want to advertise and promote its use by everyone that is not utilizing the bus system.
No, I realize that. I thought Ms. Collins just said a couple minutes ago, though, that it's a public bathroom.
May I interject? Or would you like me to wait?
Is this related to
it? It is related very specifically to this. Is that all right with you, Mr. Callahan?
Sure.
So I actually had a meeting last week, the week before, with BPA and Lanta, which was not intended to be about bathrooms. It was intended to be about an email that all of council received a while ago about heaters or waiting in the cold at the bus terminal and talking about the potential for adding heat. And then it actually extended to bathrooms because Lanta brought up the topic and did seem interested in having conversation with the city. And I directed them that was not something that I was directly involved with, but encouraged them to contact you. They did seem to have like even a sheet made up of talking points to start a conversation. So that obviously is nothing very official, but I just wanted to say like that conversation has happened and they were aware of some complicating factors, but also that it is a restroom that during their business hours at least is accessible to the public. Sorry, I just felt that was relevant to add in before everybody was like, I don't know, we'd have to talk to Lanta. That conversation.
Floor is still yours, Ms. Bowen.
No, I was wondering if the administration could get back to us on any signage or any progress with conversations that they might have with Lanta or the parking authority on signage for that area. since it is the only public bathroom in the area.
They're nodding in agreement, Scott.
Thank you. I appreciate the response to that.
Yes, one of our partners will follow up.
Thank you. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Any other new business? Councilwoman Wilhelm?
Yes, Mr. Alcohol, before you move away from the microphone, I was wondering if you could, Sand Island was mentioned, and it was mentioned that the Sand Island restrooms were opened and then closed. I was wondering if you could...
They were simply winterized. We winterize all our bathrooms that are not heated, like those bathrooms, and then late October, early November, we have no choice. We have to winterize them, otherwise we'll have issues. And then we'll put them back into service in the next few weeks.
Okay, just wanted to clarify that.
Once we clear the nighttime freezing temperatures.
Okay. Approximately when do you think they will be reopened?
Sometimes in the next few weeks, we'll start putting everything back into service at the parks, and as well as that location.
Great. I was also curious just to know how many existing, whether functioning or locked or not functioning, how many facilities exist potentially as public restrooms? If, were they to be working, the infrastructure exists. How many of those are there in the city?
So we have
public restrooms at Sand Island.
More environmentally friendly than demolishing them and putting up new whatever it may be, new buildings, because we're looking at reducing resource consumption and minimize waste. We're conserving energy. We're preserving the existing infrastructure, meaning that we already have, you know, we're not going to have to put new water lines and sidewalks and redo the streets and whatnot. So the environmental impact is concerning, and I think we need to consider that. As far as the affordable housing issue, which is, you know, number one for many people, I guess I question how we're addressing it, because currently the number of homes that are in that area that will be demolished are rentals, and people are living there. Or renting office space, and I'm assuming that it's affordable, that they can afford it because they're there now. But from the people I spoke with, that if they have to leave, they would never be able to afford the new apartments. I mean, so how are we really addressing affordable housing by doing this? I also worry about resetting a precedent, because we're going to allow to rezone just two homes in that area, and that could set a precedent for rezoning in the future. I also, I know that we speak of needing more apartments or housing, but we have the Boyd two blocks away that is only, I think, at maybe 25% occupied, 75% not occupied. We're going to have the Walnut Street apartments in the near future, and we have Martin Tower that is already approved for 1,000 apartments, so that's a lot of apartments in downtown. Do we need more apartments? You know, I think what... Ideally, and again, I know I don't have control over this, I only have a vote on the rezoning, but I think ideally, if we want it to be really community friendly and friendly environmentally and affordable housing friendly, is, you know, keep the homes there and then on the empty lots put up, you know, small scale multi-units, like the one woman said who spoke tonight about strong towns and how it's important to look at small areas and have multiple units in small areas. So for all those reasons, it was a very difficult decision. I really did put a lot of thought into it, but I will be voting no. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion from members of council? Councilman Kwiatek.
Thank you, and I want to thank Councilwoman Laird in particular for the outreach, and Councilwoman Leon to the neighbors. And I think it was really important that that neighbors had an opportunity to have direct conversations with the developers. For me, zoning map changes are a higher bar. We've, you know, been encountering more and more of these. As you saw tonight, we had a hearing beforehand about a zoning map change on 8th Avenue. We had a zoning map change request on Technology Drive last year, the year before last. When was that? And each time we're asked for these zoning map changes, we often get sort of dire, you know, sort of, you know, rhetoric from developers about, you know, what will happen if they don't get the zoning map change. In the case of Technology Drive, We voted down the zoning map change, and now we're going to have the building, which was owned by IQE, which the developer had told us was in no shape to be used for its intended purpose anymore. It was outdated, and it was so lousy, and they just, you know, really badmouthed this building. We're going to now have a new employer that's got banners up that says now hiring in the semiconductor industry, which is what the original zoning was intended for. So I'm not opposed to changing our zoning, to amending our zoning, to finding, to modernizing our zoning. But when a developer in particular is asking us to make a change for their own purposes, for me that's a higher bar. And so in this case, this area used to be zoned CB, where these two homes are. Then it was, as they say, downzoned. I don't know why that's downzoning, but I guess because you can put less stuff on it, to RT, to which conforms with the whole rest of the block going east-west. And so more aligned with what you see when you look down the street away from New, which, as we all know, is CB because that's a big, you know, central business street. So stipulating that no matter what our decision is on the zoning map change, there is going to be an apartment building because that is what the developer wants and can build by right on the 7 parcels that are zoned CB, central business. So the decision comes to, if we allow the zoning map change, they will use the spot where there are these two more naturally affordable rental properties right now, one of which is currently rentable, one of which I think maybe needs some update. They would knock those down, not to actually build more housing on that, but to make it more parking and more exit space. And so I don't love that use for that particular spot. I don't feel like it aligns with the whole rest of the block, which is RT. RT. So those are some of my concerns. And again, you know, we were shown two versions of a design, neither of which is, you know, guaranteed because the land development process, zoning, any zoning variances that might be needed, etc. But when they showed us the two versions, you know, there was this sweetening the pot that there would be nicer facade and more parking on the property if we allowed this zoning map change. So again, the facade, there's no guarantee of anything because again, these are just really sketches, not final plans. But in terms of more parking, I know that people talk a lot about parking. Parking is tight, certainly on the street in that neighborhood. However, the other side of the property is North Street, and we do have a big garage on North Street. And while there will be fewer parking spots in Walnut Street, there will still be ample parking in the downtown area. We are over garaged at this point, and so the Parking Authority has made these calculations. I think I've said this like 100 times. A lot of people who live in apartments in downtown areas park in garages. They have monthly permits. Many, many, many people who live downtown park in the garages. So I am less concerned about this pot sweetening of more parking if we change this zoning map than I am about the folks who live on Garrison Street and the loss of naturally affordable housing on that street. Obviously, it would be unfortunate if they just knock them down anyway. I would be disappointed in that decision if we didn't, you know, if they don't get the zoning map change. But yeah, I'm a no on the zoning map change because for all the reasons that I stated, mostly that it seems to me that the RT is the appropriate zone for those two properties. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan, do you have your hand up?
I do. I'm going to be voting for it for a number of reasons. Number one, I believe the height, if we don't allow them the zoning relief on this, it's going to go to 6 stories versus 5 stories. They've already stated that they need the 70 units, and they need this in order to get 70 units in without the zoning changes. They're going to have to go to a 6th floor. Also, as far as the parking, there is some on-site parking, there obviously will be more on-site parking if they're allowed the zoning relief. If anybody thinks that anybody living in those apartments is going to park in the North Street garage and walk 2 blocks up and over during cold weather and inclement weather, it's not going to happen. Those people are going to be parking and taking the first parking spots that are available out on the street. And that's just a fact. I mean, you know, you're not going to see people walking that far during inclement weather. We have a lot of days where it's snowy, rainy, and I think there's going to be a tremendous burden put on the all the residents that are over there if we don't allow this zoning relief to allow them more on-site parking, because it's just going to push more of the parking out on the street. And that's basically our choices. Those 2 homes are coming down with or without the zoning relief. And I don't know why people on council aren't looking at that, because we've already been told that by the developers. They're going to need the additional spacing for flat parking or exit and entry ramps or some other type of, decorations outside as far as flowering or things like that. They're not going to keep 2 old homes next to a brand new unit like that. This is not going to happen. So, I'm in favor of a lower height, 5 stories versus 6 stories, and I'm in favor of having more parking on site than off site. And I'm also in favor of having more people, more foot traffic on the ground to visit our restaurants and our stores. So I will be voting yes for the zoning change. Thank you.
Councilwoman Leon.
Director Collins, I have a couple of questions. Are they seeking alerta or any other tax incentive that would allow us to incentivize affordable housing in that area?
No, there's no alerta on the last year, so that expired at the end of last year.
Are we within our right outside of any type of tax incentive to restrict what kind of building they put on there?
Are you talking in terms of the affordability of the units?
No, just our land development process in general. Do we have any control mechanism to decide what they put on that property?
So when a project comes in for land development, I mean, we're looking at zoning first, and then we have our subdivision and land development ordinance. If the question is, like, on the existing 7 of the 9 parcels, if they want to build, a luxury apartment that is within zoning, under 150 feet, I mean, they are allowed to do that. They can do that regardless of what happens here tonight. You might be asking me something different.
No. I'm just thinking about thoughts that I was having during this meeting. When it comes to homes that are beautiful and old, but outside of the historic district, do we have any control mechanisms to stop them from tearing down homes that are not protected by HCC, Harbor, any other historic protection?
No. I mean, if you want to, you could tear your home down, I could tear my home down. And if you're the owner of the property, there's nothing that, to my knowledge, prevents you from tearing it down, building something new there, as long as it's within zoning. And so the times when we talk about is demolition allowed or not, to your point, is if it's within the defined areas of either the north side or the south side or the mountain area historic districts, where there are greater protections allowed under state law that would include preventing demolition potentially.
Okay, thanks. Those are the only questions I had. And I also want to shout out Councilman Laird, who actually did most of the yeoman's effort with this. It was great to see you out there in action and really organizing things to make sure that the community voices were heard. It was great to be part of that meeting. I'm taking my vote with the full confidence of the questions and answers that we heard at that meeting, knowing that the majority of that community would support the decision I'm making tonight.
Any other discussion from members of council?
I mean, I addressed my concerns, were satisfied about neighborhood engagement, and I didn't address anything else. But I recognize that it is a very complex decision, and that many people who may read an article about this decision will think it's a choice of apartments or no apartments, but that is not the choice before us. And I am recalling a woman who was here, I believe at the meeting where the public hearing was, who talked about the need to, when we are considering zoning and urban or community development, to think long term when we are taking action, instead of being reactionary. And recognizing that if we want to see different limitations, or if we want to see certain types of buildings and not others, the choice that choice doesn't happen when we're voting on something that's happening within our current parameters. That choice happens when we decide to look at the whole system and structure itself, and make changes that will impact, you know, that will allow future councils to sit here and say, oh, this actually is a choice about that. Right now, we have a decision that is pretty clear in scope. And if we want more levers to pull in the future, or we want other councils to have more levers to pull, then we should be looking at developing process and policy to make those levers available, if that makes sense. So that being said, my primary concern here is traffic going out onto Garrison and the safety of that. I really hope that there is a strong amount of public input in that part of the land development process. And a lot of conversation about traffic flow and safety. It is a walking neighborhood to schools, and it's an area with a lot of families with young kids. So I will be supporting the rezoning, and will do anything I can to help encourage public input as the land development process continues.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? Start with Councilwoman Wilhelm.
Sorry. I really wanted to add my thanks as well to Councilwoman Laird and Vice President Leo, and I know you were very helpful in the process, but what I feel that you did, and it was clearly a lot of work, but you gave the developer the opportunity to do what they said they had done, or perhaps thought they had done. But as I understand from our conversations, there were processes and opportunities and resources that you let the developer know exist that they didn't know existed. And so regardless of how the vote goes, it's been said already, apartments will happen regardless. My hope is that thanks to you and your work, the process is now moving in a different direction. There is more transparency. Lines of communications have been opened. My hope is very much that it will continue in that vein, and that the developer will see this as an opportunity to set an example. But primarily, I wanted to just really express my gratitude for the amount of effort that you put into setting this straight and making this opportunity available for the community and the developer.
Thank you, Councilwoman Leo.
I just wanted to put stomp what Ms. Laird said. If we want better levers to pull, like we as a legislative body have the ability within the state laws and stuff like that to create those better levers, so we really should go about doing that.
Any other discussion from members of council? I'll just briefly turn to our council solicitor. There was a mention of spot zoning earlier, and it's a, I just want to turn to our solicitor for just a quick opinion on just what spot zoning means. We hear it sometimes as it relates to these kind of votes. So just if you could briefly speak on what spot zoning means in the context of what we're doing with this request on the agenda.
Sure. Spot zoning is a judicial determination that a zoning ordinance treats a lot or a small area differently from similar surrounding land to the economic benefit or detriment of the landowner. So when you're looking at rezoning, that's when it comes into play. It's usually found where a zoning action creates an island out of a parcel where it's zoned differently than everything else around it. In this case, the two parcels that are at issue are located in the RT district, immediately bordering the CB district, and the request to rezone them to the CB. So in my view, if this change were made, a spot zoning challenge, which is, of course, could be brought, anybody can always sue you, would fail because these parcels they're immediately adjacent to the zone that they would be joining. So it doesn't create an island. It creates a contiguous zone. It just redraws that line a little bit. So from a spot zoning perspective, it's not spot zoning. I also wanted to speak briefly on another thing. When you're talking about creating levers, that's a good thing to think about, and your mechanism for doing that is to make changes to your zoning ordinance, because that is what dictates what is permitted in each zone. And a landowner can do whatever they want with their property within the bounds of that zoning ordinance. So, whatever anybody feels about those two existing buildings, the landowner can, if they remain in the RT, can develop that land for any purpose allowed in the RT. They can knock them down. If they join the CB, same thing. Anything allowed in the CB is permitted, they can do. And you're not going to, it's not a question of retaining those structures, because that's beyond the scope of municipal power. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'll just comment, we've revisited, and I wasn't here for the public hearing when we had it. I think that was one of the nights my family was sick, but this was before council in September of 2019. I had supported the petition at that time, and I will be supporting it again tonight. Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Nay.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. The zoning map amendment passes 5-2.
Shame.
I'll ask everyone to keep their comments to themselves as we progress through the agenda. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller are hereby authorized to execute the grant award documents for funds to be received under the 2024 Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Grant in the amount of $33,577. And will be used to expand and update the city's intersection camera network. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion on Resolution 10A. I'll just briefly touch on a couple things. Chief Cott, I don't have questions that I'm going to ask. I don't have questions, but I did just want to comment, because we did hear during public comment, and I'll always say I respect everyone's opinion, obviously based on how I vote. People disagree with me at times, which is part of the process. I did just want to mention, as it relates to sort of the opportunity cost of how we choose to use these dollars versus other things that we could be using the money for, it is worth mentioning, as it relates to kind of the service aspect of Serve and Protect with the Bethlehem Police Department, while we are using these for camera infrastructure, which has their own utilities as it relates to investigations, being proactive. And there's, I could think of a few, and anyone can find in the local media, times where our camera network has helped victims of crimes that were involved in certain events and help solve them and be used in investigative purposes. But just aside from what we're using this for, our police department does have an entire community services division, if I'm not mistaken. Chief, you could feel free to interject if I'm wrong, but an entire community service division that's sole intent and purpose is to be out and engaging with our community and providing that community policing that so many of us value and are involved with. We have our Community Connections Program, which we heard from Ms. Berger earlier and Chief Cott. We do have it used to be called VPAIR, now it's called something else, but it's the program where members of the community who are looking for assistance related to addiction can walk into the police department, turn in paraphernalia, and be referred to a treatment program. And we still have that in effect, correct, Chief Cott?
Correct.
And as it relates to not even just us as a city, but the system in which we operate, I'm not too familiar with Lehigh County's diversionary courts, but Northampton County does have a mental health court, a recovery court for individuals facing charges related to their own drug addiction. We have a veterans court. So there are other systems in place to serve the community. Not to say, like I said before, that this is a perfect system or there's not always room to improve. I recognize when you're allocating any money over here, that means you're not putting that money over here. But I just think it bears mentioning that we make efforts to try to be comprehensive in how we spread around what resources we have. And I will be supporting the Resolution 10A this evening. Any other discussion from members of council? Councilwoman?
Actually, Chief, I have a quick question. Who can access our video footage? If we replace cameras, who can access that camera footage? Is it just internally, can external?
Internally in the city, so the police department, there are some members of public works that view
Chief
it.
Chief, if you don't mind coming to a microphone just to make sure the camera is set up, please, for the reporting.
So members of the police department, the service center, there are a handful of select members of public works that are able to view the city cameras. So during a snow emergency, can check the, in addition to the boots on the ground out on the road and the plows, they can check the condition of the roadways, but it's internal viewing only.
All right, thank you.
Councilwoman Laird?
Are the video files stored locally or in the cloud?
So those are local, and they're written over every so often. I believe there's like a 2-week loop.
I remembered you mentioned the loop. I couldn't recall if we had talked about local or cloud. Okay. So even the there's not like a software company who could access them even or get breached. Okay.
Correct.
Great.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other discussion from members of council? Councilman Quayta.
Another question about that. But they would be subject to subpoena. No? Yes? I mean, if they could be, yes, absolutely. But again, it would have to fall under that retention time period. Okay.
Any other discussion? Councilwoman
Leo? Sorry. For our solicitor, I have a question about how subpoenas work. Can ICE saw that we had a camera. Could they do like a broad subpoena for give me all of your footage, or would the subpoena have to be specific, i.e. give us footage at the specific times? So I'm thinking how we do right to know. So how does that work?
That's a very interesting question with a lot of nuance. But broadly, anyone can... You can service a subpoena, and if the subpoena or and then there are mechanisms to guard against a subpoena, to request a motion for a protective order to say, you know, this isn't narrow enough, I'm not turning this over, and let a court decide. Now, jurisdictionally, to speak more intelligently about the jurisdictional issues, I'm not prepared to do that at this moment, but broadly, there are mechanisms to guard against disclosures.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Garden State Fireworks Incorporated to provide the 4th of July fireworks display for 2025. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-1. 10C.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Grace Industries Incorporated to provide improvements at Friendship Park. Resolution is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion on Resolution 10C. I'll start with Councilwoman Cranston.
Thanks. I guess I don't know if this question is for Mr. Evans or Mr. Alcall, but I know we spoke of this before, but how is this being funded? The $900,000 for the Friendship Park?
Sure. Yeah, we've talked a bunch about the different grants that are going into this project. We received a large grant from the National Park Service through the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. That one was for about $700,000. We have about, $500,000 from the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, just a state grant. There's a little bit of CDBG money going into the project, and also I offered to get up and now I'm forgetting one of the other grants. I thought.
Is there any, is it all grant money?
It's fully
it's
grant
fully
funded.
All
yeah.
grant money.
Yeah.
There's no match with any of the grants? I don't recall.
I believe we have the grant, federal money is matching state money, I believe, in the instances where that's required.
And are we, with the federal money, are we pretty much guaranteed at this point? Like, is there an issue with it or no?
So we are under agreement for the National Park Service dollars. There's no indication that that is money that would be pulled back at this point. We're signed, we're under agreement. I actually think the money has already been transferred to the state, and we're under contract with the state. So we feel.
And the only other question, I know I brought it up before, but is in this whole redesign, are we looking at, hopefully we're doing accessible and sensory sensitive areas and things like that with the new playground?
It's fully ADA.
But also like for sensory, areas for, children have sensory issues and things like that. I just hope we are. If we're gonna put, I know it's grant money, but it's a lot of money into a whole new playground. That
I believe
there's like in Saucon Park, I saw that we're having a sensory area. But if that's gonna just be passed, I know I spoke to Mrs. Evans about this in the past, and I'm sure she probably is on now. But I just want to make sure that if we're doing something new, that we're certainly looking at that. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? Councilwoman Laird?
Just excited to vote for this one in support of it. It's been a long time coming, so.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion from members of council?
Ditto.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Bedco for the 2025 Live on the Greenway. Resolution sponsored by Mr. Colon and Ms. Kwiatek.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey-Smith?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. 10D passes 7-0. I'll accept a motion as second to consider 10E through 10G as a group.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilwoman Leon, second by
Councilwoman Wilhelm. Any discussion on the motion? Mr. Miller, please call the roll on the motion to consider the agenda items as group.
Ms. Quiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
Ms. Leone.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne.
Aye. Motion passes 7-0. Please read 10E through 10G.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolutions are hereby granted for 232 West 3rd Street to conduct various renovations to the front and side facades. 230 West 3rd Street to conduct various renovations to the front facade. And 14 through 36 West 3rd Street concerning various details associated with the proposed hotel structure. The resolutions are sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Ms. Quiatek.
Discussion on the group of COAs. We'll call roll.
Ms. Quiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
Ms. Leone.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne.
Aye. The group passes 7-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safe, everybody.